We're ready.
There'd be more people here than first right agenda.
I'd like to welcome you to our regular, our work session for the Uena County in the large commission conference room at 152 East 100 North. It is 10 a.m. and on May 27th. We'll just go ahead and start with our opening request for proposals, UC26-11, the St. Paul Episcopal Church Rehabilitation Project, and Mike Wilkins will be doing that.
Okay, commissioners, we've received, let me turn this on, we've received two proposals, one from Abstract Something Restoration Inc. out of Salt Lake City. Maybe they spelled it better inside. So, I won't read the prices.
That's correct.
But can I at least look to see what the actual name is?
Sure.
Because when I first looked at it, I thought it was masonry, but I don't think that's the word for it. Masonry, Abstract Masonry Restoration, Inc. out of Salt Lake City. That's what you look at. It doesn't say masonry. Okay, I'll make sure I wasn't the only one being wrong. The second bid is from GBW Construction out of Bowman, Utah. Okay, they are open.
That's
all we do. Two bids.
Okay. So now they'll go to, is there a committee or is it the board?
No, it's a committee. So all RFPs, they'll be reviewed by the purchasing office first to ensure that they meet the minimum mandatory criteria. And then they will be handed over to a three-person committee where they will score the technical criteria. And they will not see the cost in that portion. Then the committee will meet and will reveal the cost. And then we'll see who the combined highest scoring vendor is. And then if it's within the budget, we'll go to commission and the board and see how to proceed.
Do you know if we already have a committee?
Yes, we have a scoring committee.
Okay, perfect. Okay, thank you. Any other questions or input on that item? Seeing none, we'll move to number two, which is D2 Real Investments, LLC, requesting a rezone from RA1 to R3 or R2 on property at 360 South, 1500 West, serial number 04134-0005, and Deanna Baum will present this from Community Development.
Okay. And it's not showing up on the screen, but I don't know if there's something else that needs.
You're plugged in the wall.
Maybe it's out of the wall a little bit there.
There it is. Thank you.
It was out of the wall a little bit.
Before you start, Deanna, yeah. I forgot, Mike, so could we have this on next week's commission meeting, you think, or do we need longer?
No, we need longer. Let me look. We typically won't do that because we have to have an internal review. Then we like to give the committee 1 week to review it, and they independently review it. Then the committee has a follow-up meeting where we go through the process together. So it's usually 2 weeks. But with this committee, based on availability, they won't be meeting until June 9th.
Okay.
So we intend on having a recommendation for the commission on June 16th.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Deanna, go ahead.
Okay. All right, so this is an application from D2 Real Investments, LLC. The property is located at 690 South, 1500 West. It's 0.93 acres. Currently, it's zoned RA1. They want to rezone that to R3 or R2 so that they can divide the property. Right now, under RA1, it can't be divided at all because of the location of the home. So these are just kind of the configurations of different ways they would do it. If they remove the home, which basically that is their plan right now, is to remove the home, they are going to try to divide it evenly along the front, to divide the frontage evenly between three lots. Otherwise, they will do a flag lot. looking at the numbers, they could do this under either zone, R2 or R3. This went to the Planning Commission last Wednesday, and Planning Commission recommended R2 for the rezone. They wanted to avoid the types of things that can be done in R3, like apartments, anything over four homes, like a townhome of more than four.
They can do a townhome of four?
They could do a townhome of four in R2.
Okay.
But they can't do anything more than that.
Or a fourplex.
Or a fourplex.
Yeah.
But R2 also makes it to where they have to have a flag lot even if the house is removed.
So right. Regardless, they're going to
turn your mic
whatever
on
scenario the they're going to remove the house.
That's the plan right now.
Is to remove the home. Yes. They could end up changing their mind, but yeah, at this point, the plan is to remove the home. Right now, the property, the surrounding properties, RA1. You see the Vernal City boundary around there. pretty much surrounding this property. It's got Vernal City medium and high density and some commercial.
Do they have connections for if they go from one lot to three?
They talked to Ashley Valley. They have letters from all the utilities. the future land use in this area shows medium density, which is close to our R2 zone. If they wanted to do R3 is not in the future land use, but it's coded. It is expected to be placed throughout the county. Intended to be dispersed throughout the county. So it's not going to show up on any map because it's expected that it's going to be placed in certain spots. As long as there is necessary infrastructure. Up to 30 units is recommended where there's infrastructure available, and any more than 30 units is expected if there's schools or commercial areas nearby. And this area has all of that nearby, commercial, schools, and it has the necessary infrastructure. There are some pictures, I won't show them all just for time. That's the home that's on the property. And just from the north side, you can kind of see there's a home back behind it. And then north of the property, there are these townhomes. And then there's a few homes across the street. And then another apartment complex nearby, but not within view of the home of this property. Like I said, Planning Commission did review this. They did unanimously recommend R2 as the new zone. And then we were going to present this next Tuesday to the County Commission.
Okay. Are there any other comments or anything? Okay. Then we will put it on next Tuesday's agenda, please. So we'll move to number three, UNS School District requesting a rezone from R1 to R2 on property at 604 South, 2150 West, Vernal, serial number 05072-0011, and again, Deanna Long, Community Development, will present.
Okay, this is another property that's located near Vernal City. You can see on this aerial the Vernal City boundary. They're wanting to develop this property and put in two subdivisions. This top subdivision will be single-family homes. They have about 50 lots there. And then the bottom, they want to put in townhomes. So the rezone today being discussed is for just this top portion. They want to rezone from R1 to R2 so that they can get the smaller lots and smaller setbacks. Again, the surrounding property is mostly RA1, and there are some pockets of R2. It is near Vernal City, moderate and medium density zoning. Future land use shows this area as moderate density, but there is medium density planned about 500 feet to the north. And again, well, this is for R2, so we can talk about the R3. This the bottom section for the townhomes will come back at a later meeting to propose R3 zoning there. But for now, we're just talking about the R2 on the north portion of the property. I can show the pictures if you want, just an empty lot. Maybe I'll just show some of the neighboring homes. On the north side, you've just got single-family dwellings on lots that are about 8,000 square feet, most of them on average. And then on the south, there's these duplexes all along that road south of the property. And again, those properties are about 8,000 square feet, but they have the duplexes rather than a single-family home. Planning Commission reviewed this at last week's meeting, and I believe, again, it was unanimous. Right. So it was unanimous to recommend R2 zoning. I'd like to take this again to next Tuesday's meeting.
So is this a property that you and a school district is selling, or are
yes.
they developing it themselves?
They're selling it, and the developer has been the one who we're dealing with, but you and a school district is part of the application. They signed it.
And they do have commitments because it's not in Pearl City. They have commitments for all utilities, including water.
They're going to turn over water shares, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay.
Can you pull the one up again that shows the plat of the lots and everything on it? Yes, that one. I was just concerned about the access points and that.
Okay.
Because there's only two showing on there. Right.
Yes.
Two. Now they've got that other road that's going east off that T on the south side.
Sorry.
It's stubbed to a vacant.
It's just stubbed.
Yeah.
Because that's a vacant lot there.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then stubbed to the west as well, so that if anything developed there, they can continue on.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So east leads to a road here. And then
So the one that goes to the vacant lot that she's talking about, is there a up just a little bit, is there an easement or right away off of that into the vacant lot?
No.
Yeah, well, it goes all the way to the lot, yes.
Oh, to the lot, yes, but not through the lot.
Not through the lot.
I'm guessing it's not owned by these individuals.
Right. No,
I did.
My thought process is to extend that road out for another exit. Is that a possibility?
Wasn't this property, didn't it burn a few years ago? Wasn't there a fire in the middle of all these houses? I think it's a dry field. I think there was a fire there.
Yeah, you're right.
Correct. Yeah, I think so. So I think it'd be good to do something with that.
Yeah, that is a lot of homes for a couple of exits, I guess.
I did have a question about the north exit. It looks like that is a road with that turnaround up at the northwest.
Here.
How come they did not have to put that out as a road?
So it's only required that they have a second access. So that's why it wasn't required, because the code doesn't require
that. They're trying not to disturb the neighbors as much as they could.
But I do not want to forfeit the safety of individuals by not having enough.
No. It meets the requirements for access with the two, and then even once you get out on the two, there's multiple ways out, either through the neighborhood
right.
to the east or to Fifth South to the north.
Do we have a limit on the number of units and accesses? Like, how many can they go and only have two accesses?
Choose
what they need.
Okay. I would really like us to look at that and set maybe some criteria to say if they're above this many.
So it's a fire code
issue
that the state adopts.
So that's it. And it's anything above what goes with
30, more than 30.
Is two accesses.
30
and that's
dwelling.
It.
Yeah.
You can go up to 500 homes and you only have to have two accesses. Wow. But we can be stricter, right? Than the fire.
I don't know for sure. I'd have to look into that and see. I know on the building code we can't make changes, so I don't know what the fire code is. We can give it Jeremy, though. But this really is, I mean, you're talking 80 homes on two accesses. We have subdivisions that have more than that with only two accesses, and the access is onto the same road. This one has access to multiple different points. Two accesses onto Fifth South, and then another access into the neighborhood, which has multiple connections with different roads. Even. So it really has more access than most of our development does.
I just, offline, I'll get with you and we can talk about it a little bit more, because I have seen, I just don't want to get caught where some development comes in and wants to put in a lot of homes, and it seems not safe for them to be able to get out. Because we had that at Vernal City, and we got caught.
And Jeremy's one that reviews that for fire access and things like that. So I know there are some criteria. It's not just two accesses. It is where they're placed and things like that. So there's other criteria, because you can't just have two accesses that are, you know, spaced 100 feet apart and say, well, these are two accesses. That doesn't work. So there's other criteria than just having the two accesses.
Okay. I'll get with you then. Get that information. Thank you.
On that, I've got a question. On that same thing, where that access is already there and stubbed out, is there a way that the commission could say, since that is already an access there on that northwest corner, you're already stubbed there for a road, and you're stubbed down the bottom.
Which they have that. They're tying into that one there.
They're tying into that one and creating another one on the east side.
Yep.
But could the commissioner say where that's already accessed to the Vernal City Road require that to be that third access?
Well, yeah. I kind of thought when they stub them, the whole purpose was so then when that is developed, the vacant, it connects that in. So as for us to not connect that?
It does. And if it just wouldn't be the commission that would do that. It would be the planning commission that would do that.
So what would be the process there? We say, let's go back and request of the planning commission to look at that?
Well, so you wouldn't do it with the rezone. It happens with the subdivision, as the subdivision is developed.
Would you please let them know our concerns, folks?
Yeah.
So that when they do evaluate that, they can look at that.
Okay, pass it along.
But I don't have a problem rezoning it to R2. I just am concerned about the safety with access. Like I said, we had a development, high-density development that only had one access in the city when I was there.
Yeah.
It caused a great problem because there was an issue, an emergency issue, and the road, one road in and out was blocked.
Yeah. So no, it's definitely a concern.
I just don't want to have us have that happen again.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. And so that one, we can put that on next week as well, did you say? Next week?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll go to number 4, which is Resolution 05-27-2026-R1. The resolution committing to a goal to significantly reduce traffic fatalities and serious injuries. And Matt Kazir with Community Development will present.
Yeah, and Jenny can jump in here as well. She was the one that handled the grant mostly and has a lot of knowledge on that. But this was a grant that we received to do Safe Streets for All, and we now have the plan in place, and so the last step in this process to be able to collect the grant money is to adopt this resolution, essentially stating that we're going to follow through with the plan. And so I know as they developed the plan, they worked with both community development, with Trails, and also with Scott Hardman at the Road Department to make sure that they were focusing on the right areas and get information about, you know, where accidents have happened and things like that. And then the plan puts forth some problematic areas so that we know, like, if we're going to be doing a project to make safer streets, then we know where the highest priority is to do those projects. And so Scott's aware of where those are. He was part of developing those. And so as, you know, as there's money available and manpower and things like that, then those would be the projects that would be worked on to improve our street system. And I mean, eventually, I guess the goal of the state is to get down to zero fatalities. That we've heard that before. The county needs to commit to reducing our fatalities by 50% It said by 2024, but that's already passed. And so it'd probably be better to put that out to like 2034. So some of the language is just language that we got from the state, but I guess we could say that it's already done and that's 2024. But it'd probably be best to change that on the resolution to say 2034. And then that gives us the goal to shoot towards as far as reducing fatalities and injuries and stuff on county roads. Is there anything else, Jenny, that I missed on that?
Just on the 2024 language, Matt's right. That was probably just standard contract language because the award came through in 2023. And so some counties complete that in 12 months, so that was just probably tied to the contract. And then I just wanted to remind you, Commissioner Norton, that this was a prerequisite to applying for an implementation grant. So this federal program has a planning grant, which is the comprehensive safety action plan where it identifies the problem areas and makes a plan of how to make those safety improvements. And then that is a requirement to apply for a subsequent grant for actual construction or, you know, incorporating roundabouts or designated bike lanes and things like that. We don't know if that grant will open next year because this was the last year. But even if that funding opportunity isn't available, there will be other federal opportunities that we can use this plan for.
Great. Sounds awesome.
And I guess there's just one question on the part of the resolution has that there'll be an annual reckoning or I don't know the right word, but we have to submit information annually to the state
right. To
show that we're working on this. And we're in the process of finding that out if there's a grant requirement that we have to have in there or if it doesn't need to be there. So we will find that out before next week, hopefully.
Sounds great. So you do want it on next week? Okay. June 2nd, isn't that? Okay, anything else? Any other comments, questions? Okay, then we'll move on to number 5, ordinance number 05-27-2026-01. This is amending area and frontage requirements and setbacks in the R1, R2, and R3 zoning districts, and Matt Kazir with Community Development will present.
Yeah, so, I mean, we've been hearing now for several years that, you know, water's going to be a big issue, and it already has been a big issue, and this year could be even a bigger issue with the drought conditions that we're in. And so as we were going through things and looking at things, it seemed to make sense to look at our area requirements for our residential areas. So these are not the areas like RA1 or agricultural areas. These are zonings for neighborhoods. So to help with reduce the amount of water, because, well, I guess I should step back just a little bit. Most of the water in residential is outdoor water. So we're treating water, and then we're putting it on our grass and our flowers and our gardens outside. And so to help reduce that, we thought that we could reduce the lot sizes in these areas, and that would help to reduce how much area outside there is being watered. And again, these aren't mandatory numbers. These are numbers that a developer or a property owner can use if they choose to. They don't have to go to these minimums, but it gives them an option to do that. And so we did take this to Planning Commission. They had a public hearing it opened in April. They continued it in May. And we did get a few comments from the public about this, and they were positive comments on doing this and reducing the lot sizes in these residential areas. We don't have a lot of areas that are zoned R1, R2, or R3. They're just sitting there vacant. Usually it's like today, you know, somebody comes in and they want to do a project, and so they come in and they rezone their property to these zones. And then they develop their project. So There's a few little parcels out there with these zoning designations on them that aren't being used, but not very many. It's usually something that happens, and they develop their project, and so that area becomes developed. So, but Planning Commission ultimately, they did decide to make this change, and they felt like it would be a way that the county can help reduce the amount of water that is used in certain areas. Again, it's not affecting the areas that are outside of these zones, these residential zones. And these are our most dense zones that the county has, R1, R2, and R3. So what it would do is it would just, essentially it would reduce each of the minimum lot size requirements by 1,000 square feet. So 10 by 100 roughly in area. So in R1, you'd be going from 8,000 square feet to 7,000 square feet, maintaining the same 8-foot setback. So really, if you're familiar with Crystal Home Subdivision, which is right there where the Walmart cutoff road ties into 1500 West, that's an R1 zone. Most of those lots in there are around 8,000 square feet. And so if you took a subdivision like that, and I actually did that subdivision, using these new numbers, they would have been able to put 4 or 5 new homes or more homes in that subdivision. But as you drive through that, if the setbacks are the same, you really wouldn't notice the difference in the lot size. I mean, it's not a huge amount, but it is some. So that's the change that would be made in R1. I guess the other part of this, too, is with the frontage requirements, where we're going down 1,000 square feet, we'd reduce the frontage requirements by 10 feet to help offset that as well. And
but
then
only
the
in the R2, it doesn't affect R1 now?
So it affects R1, so that's the second column over here, sorry, right here. So it'd be going from 80 feet to 70 feet for a single family, and then for attached it would go from 70 feet to 60 feet. And attached is a twin home, so where you have the property, the houses are attached, but you have a property line that goes down.
I'm sorry, I was looking at the setbacks.
Okay, yeah, and then no setback changes in R1.
But there would be in R2.
Yeah, so R2 is a little bit higher density zone. It allows for fourplexes and things like that. R1 only allows for up to a duplex. And I guess that's here in this column. So it would change, even for a duplex, it would move it from 12,000 square feet to 7,000 square feet. And again, that's only they have to be able to fit the building on there. They have to still meet the parking requirements. So they're not getting out of any requirements. But if they have a duplex that will fit on 7,000 square feet, they can provide the parking. They can do it. If they can't, then they have to go larger. So a lot of it depends on the size of the building, parking areas, and things. Even for single family, you have to have at least 2 off-street parking spaces for each residence. And then under R2, it would take it from 7,000 to 6,000 square feet on the minimum. And then what we did here in R2, since it's a little bit higher density zone, we just matched what R3 currently says about for multifamily stuff. So you start at the 6,000 square feet, and then you add 1,000 square feet for each additional unit for the minimum lot size. And again, in R2, they can go up to a fourplex or 4 units, so they can't go more than that. So with that, I mean, at 6,000, and then you'd add 3, so at 9,000 square feet, they might be able to have a fourplex. But again, when you get a fourplex, it throws you into the commercial site plan standards, and so you have to do stormwater retention. There's garbage collection and parking requirements. So, you know, again, if they can't fit it on that small of a lot, then they have to increase the lot size or reduce the number of units that are there. And then it would also change the setback to match the R3 setback and go to a 5-foot setback. And that's really, without doing fire rating on a building, that's the minimum setback you can have from your property line. And so to keep some spacing there, and to keep compliant with our building code requirements without having to make people fire rate their buildings, reduce the number of windows and stuff on that side of the building. We would keep it at the 5 feet. And so, and then R3, again, it changes, I'm sorry, R2, it changes the frontage requirements for single family from 70 to 60. And then for additional units, it just keeps it at the 60 feet. And then for an attached unit, it takes it from 50 to 40, so a 20. And then in R3, it would take it from 6,000 to 5,000 square feet, and you'd keep the same 1,000 square feet for each additional unit. And then it takes the frontage from 60 to 50 for all single family and multifamily, and then changes the attached unit or twin home to 35 feet. And then other than that, everything else stays the same as far as other setbacks. But this will help, again, it will help with water, can also help, it can help, it won't necessarily by us doing this help with affordable housing, but it can be, it is a component of affordable housing. But again, you can build a good sized home on these small lots. It just takes up more of the lot. But people that want to do affordable housing, this helps in that if they want to, because it allows for a smaller lot, which helps disperse the improvement costs that they have to put into the subdivision, which helps them keep the homes at a more affordable price. So.
Do you know what the fire rating is between, like if you had a house and you wanted to put a garage but not attached? Do you know what the distance is you have to have it from the dwelling?
Yeah, so there's, on the same property, on residential, there's no separation requirement. So you could be right up next to it. Yeah. But if it's on an adjacent lot, then it's either 5 feet or you have to fire rate. And so on detached buildings, we do allow for a lesser setback when they're completely behind the house. But if they get closer than that 5 feet, they have to fire rate, which generally includes sheetrock on both sides of that wall. And then it limits the number of openings you can have in the wall. And then and also if you have an overhang, you have to have drywall on that. Typex. Fire rated drywall in those areas. But none of those setbacks would be changing under the proposal.
Okay. Are there any questions, comments?
I guess I should say, so Planning Commission, maybe I already said this, but Planning Commission did recommend approval of this and it was unanimous.
Well, all it really does is give them options.
And if a developer doesn't want to go down, they don't like the 7,000 square feet, they're not obligated to do that. They could have a half-acre lot in these zones if they want to.
Let's see one do that.
But, yeah, I don't think you'll see them, but you might see some that don't want the higher density because they're trying to develop a certain type. So, you know, they might stick to the 8,000 or 9,000 or 10,000 square foot lots. It all depends on the product that they're selling and what they feel like is going to benefit them the most. But they can believe they're
give them options is a good thing.
Right.
And then if we can help reduce water or help with affordable housing, then those are bonuses that there are.
Okay. Any comments, questions? Anybody? Okay. And that one on June
2nd
as well?
Yeah, and I'll get it in ordinance format and get it out to the commission and Lauren.
All right, number six, acceptance of several right-of-way grants from the Bureau of Land Management. I believe these are Title V. These are Title V roads that we've been working with the BLM to secure, and they have presented these roads to us for acceptance, I guess. Okay, go ahead. And
yeah.
That will be Matt again.
So, Commission, as you're aware, the BLM approached the county about trying to get Title V right-of-ways to the county for roads that are that run across BLM property that are not being disputed. So both the county and the BLM agree that the road exists and is being used and is there, and it's not going through any of their sensitive areas or areas with wilderness characteristics or things like that. And so they made good on their word that they gave us at a couple different meetings, saying that they're going to get these things processed. And these are the first. There's 12 of them here today. I did get an email from them, so they have 27 that are coming. So this is almost half of what they have ready to go. And then we're also going to be getting them some new ones to be looking at. They want to try and get through this process in the next 2.5 years. To try and get all the ones that aren't being disputed, let's just get those off the books and, you know, get those get the right-of-ways into the county hands and go from there. So the maps is a little bit confusing as I looked at it. So we're not looking, the yellow roads are roads that are still there that are not being granted, and these thinner brown lines are the ones that are being granted. So this is in the kind of the southwest part of the county, over towards the Duchesne County line. That's where all of these roads are here. So again, it's all of these thinner, darker lines that are being granted to us. So you can see that some of them have gaps and things in them, and that just might be, you know, like this little piece might be coming in the next round or something. So we'll just have to kind of wait and see. But these are the ones that they have done now. And these were based off of applications that we turned in. Oh, I'm trying to think how long ago that was. 3 years ago, maybe even four. Actually, it might have been before this commission even. So 4 or 5 years ago, I think. So they've been kind of holding onto these for a little while. But they're now starting to process them and get them through. So hopefully we'll see more of these come through. But these are the 12 that we have ready, so I figured we'd just get them on an agenda so that we handle them out.
The light blue squares have got to be trust land sections?
Yeah, so these are the trust land sections. And so what BLM is granting us is only to those lines.
Do we need to get with CITLA to have those on their property as well?
Yeah, so I think that for the most part, the county purchased the rights away from CITLA about, what was that, 13 or 14 years ago?
Yeah, it's been quite a while ago.
For most of our rights away through CITLA. There were a few that they didn't give us, but for the most part, I would say that most of these are, we already have rights away.
So we should show the road going through then on the ones that we have purchased. You would see it going through their property then?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. We just need to fix the map.
So we're just actually showing just the roads on the BLM. I don't know what's, I'd have to get with Matthew to see why. I'm guessing it's because this layer came from BLM, and so they don't show any roads outside of their jurisdiction.
Okay.
So this isn't our official county transportation map that we use. But
would we be able to maybe have both at the meeting so we can see how they continue through and stuff?
Yeah, we can do that.
That would be great.
So anyway, I guess our recommendation is that we accept these Title V grants that they've offered, and I have them here. We actually will have to have two copies of each one signed, so somebody's hand's going to get tired. And
you're going to wait till John gets back, right?
Say, are we doing this on June 2nd?
And then BLM will come in and sign them after the county signs them.
Okay.
And then we give them one copy, and then one copy goes to the recorder's office to be recorded.
So
that would be the process of it. And I think they have, let me just see who they have down for signature on it. So,
John.
I think it probably was. Oh, so they just have the signature holder, so it could be anyone. And then a test by the clerk auditor. So we'll have lots of people with sore hands that week, I guess.
Perfect for a good purpose, though, I think.
Yeah. No, it really is. It's good that we're able to do this, and to, if we can clear up some of these roads, because some of these roads are RS-2477 claims. I guess I should note that, too, that the RS-2477 language is in the grant, so that if we ever get a decision on RS-2477 and it's in our favor, then the grant would go away and it would revert back to the RS-2477. But if it's not in our favor, then we keep the grant. So it's really a good deal for the county, and ultimately will be it's beneficial to have agreement or have an easement, so we actually know that the county can go out there and do work on these roads if we need to, and we're not going to get into a fight over it with BLM. So.
All right. Is there any questions or comments or questions?
Yes. Question. Thank you so much for your time.
Do you mind stating your name?
And come to a microphone.
Sorry. Hello. I'll come sit. Right here. So my name is Taylor Lawson. I live here in Vernal. And I was just wondering if you could possibly explain whether today's action on this item is part of potentially larger phase access or site readiness effort connected to any industrial discussions in Uinta County?
No.
Okay. So are any of these rights-of-way, like, geographically connected to sites being currently evaluated for gas generation, transmission, or utility infrastructure purposes?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. So just question. Given the county drought emergency and the basin's ozone permitting issues, at what point would the public receive notice and hearings if a larger project tied to these corridors move forward?
So I think it would depend on what property they're being developed on, whether they're on CITLA or BLM or private properties. The county mainly deals with these things on something like what you're talking about, that type of use. If it's on CITLA, they'll generally require them to come to the county and follow the county's land use requirements. BLM may not do that, so BLM might be able to just approve these things without the county being involved in the decision. But if the county is involved, then most of the things you're talking about would require either industrial zoning or a conditional use permit. And so the county would be notifications would go out when those applications are received.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for the clarification. And if I might just ask one more question. So you had mentioned that these applications were submitted some years ago. Were these original applications tied solely to longstanding county road access issues, or have any road corridors since become relevant after submitting these applications?
Yeah, so these were just, these were based on the longstanding county transportation map, and none of these are have been added in after that point. But we're going to be adding, we're going to be giving them other roads to run through the same process with, but it's not really tied to any development in particular. It's just roads that are on our current transportation map that the county wants to make sure we have access to for the future.
Right. Thank you so much. I appreciate the clarification.
Thanks for your question. Okay. Is there any other discussion or questions? Okay, seeing none, we'll move to number 7, which is the interlocal agreement for the use of the Uinta County law enforcement gun range. And the sheriff is not here, so
I'm going to have
Warren Anderson from our civil attorney will address.
Yeah, I was asked to handle number 7 named by the sheriff. So this is a template. It's a form concerning an interlocal agreement between Uinta County on behalf of the sheriff's office and other law enforcement agencies within the region who come and use the sheriff's gun range in Buckskin Hills. The sheriff just wanted to codify that, memorialize that into an agreement. Because there has been some concern about some damage, some not picking up after themselves when they're done. So the sheriff just wanted to create a few rules and have these agencies sign and agree to that. They are still in discussion about cost because as part of this, there will be a range master who must be present when other agencies utilize this range. And so he's still in discussions with those agencies about the cost. Although it's my understanding that they are for this agreement, they think that that is necessary just to protect that valuable range that we have up there. So I don't know if this will be on next week's agenda or the following, as he's still trying to determine that. But he asked that I do present that in this work session.
Thank you.
Any questions?
I think it's great that we can utilize it for all the law enforcement agencies around. I know this is a part of the range that's separate from the public use range, and it's just good for them to train, and it really helps them a lot. So
it's valuable to the sheriff who wants to protect it.
Yes, definitely. And so this is great. Thank you. Any other questions or comments on that? And we won't put a date. We'll just wait to hear when they can get that finalized and the other things worked out. Okay. Now, are we tabling number 8 still?
Yeah, let me discuss it. Just
okay. So number 8 is a renewal contract, FML strategic with the state of Utah. It was, again, going to be the sheriff or Lauren.
So, and this should actually read, it's a renewal contract with SML Strategic with Uinta County. So this is the services, the Justice Court services. We are currently in a contract with them that will not expire until September or October, I believe September 30th, October 1st, something like that. However, there's been discussion about moving that department under the sheriff's office. So this was placed on the agenda, but I think it will come up at a later time as we decide what to do with that department. Once again, this is all grant monies. It talks about the state because it's monies from the state that come to you into county, but it's with this SML Strategic who handle those services for us. So that will come up in the discussion about how we will, going forward, if we'll put that with the attorney's office or the sheriff's office.
Are there any questions or discussion on that?
So we won't put that on Tuesday's agenda.
No.
Just to clarify that.
But we need to talk to the sheriff, so I don't think it'll be this Tuesday. So I think it'll be after that.
Neither one, 7 or 8.
Right. I don't, there's no dates or questions.
Yeah, right. Neither one of those.
Unless we get some information, they finalize that 7 may be on, but as of now, no.
Thank you.
And number 1 may be on June 16th. We'll try to get you an answer on that next week.
We'll wait till we hear from Jenny on that.
Okay.
For number 1.
Sounds good.
The boss over there, she'll let us know what we can and cannot do.
I think it's funny how powerful you think I am. I get a right state code. I mean, I'll take it.
Okay. That's the end of our agenda. Is there anything else that needs to come before us? If not,
I move we adjourn.
We are adjourned.